The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Coming to you just before July the 4th. So as we're recording this, it is July the 2nd. We'll have a little discussion on the cotton crop, I think, today, right? So we got Simmer, Josh, and Josh's intern, the man, the myth, the legend, Zeke.
Zeke Colbert we've got here in the studio as well.
Good morning.
Morning.
He did say something.
He did.
Thinking he wasn't going to say anything.
I can't just be introduced and not say anything at all. So.
Yeah. Or he would have just nodded and nobody would know.
That's right. Yeah.
But, guys, it's been hot.
I tell you what, I was talking to somebody the other day. I started sweating at like 9 o'clock when I got to Prattville, and I didn't quit sweating until I took a shower that night before I went to bed. I mean, the body is not acclimated to this heat. It went from pleasant June to not pleasant.
Yep.
Fast.
Yeah, we're in the condition now, the air you can wear. It is bad.
Yeah.
It is hot. Speaking, you know, Zeke can do on this yesterday. He backpack sprayed a good bit on farm. So we're feeling it now.
Yeah, I told my students, I'm going to not name the grower, but, you know, one of the growers we work with, they got a pool right behind the house. And my folks were collecting data there, and they were complaining about how hot it got, all that. And I'm like, yeah, it was. I'm like, but when y'all got done, you should have just went and jumped in the pool.
Jump in the pool, yeah.
They're like, one of them said, oh, they have a pool. I'm like, yeah, you just got to go look behind the house.
Yeah, there's the air is so heavy, there's resistance when you swing a sweep net right now. But Josh, I do think that's a good positive turn for the cotton crop.
I do. I just put out the newsletter this morning, and that was one of my things, was talking about the cotton season's heating up. And so, you know, not the best weather to, you know, break out your sweep nets or go backpack spray, but it's dang good weather to grow some cotton. We're in the 90s. Sometimes the heat index values are over 100, so we're in it. If we can have some adequate moisture and stuff, we're gonna make a good crop.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that yesterday, because I was going through some of our trials over here in shorter central Alabama, and I mean, all corn, soybean, cotton. I went and looked at all our stuff, man, crops are growing really well. You know, I'm like, well, good thing we're in a good situation at this point of the year, because I was thinking about last year where I think we were either getting into a drought or we were already kind of...
No, last year...
Or it was late July.
Yeah. It rained every day in June, right?
Mm-hmm. In May.
Then it quit raining.
Well, it was around early planting season last year.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. So, hopefully we'll end up with the similar rest of the summer like we had last year and make another bumper crop.
Yeah. Hope so.
I hope so here. So speaking of that cotton crop, kind of wanted to just talk about where we're at. USDA put out their planted acreage estimate. So they put out the numbers. I was pleasantly surprised on this number. 360,000. 360,000 acres is what they've got. So that's a 70,000 acre increase from 2025.
To quote my 4-year-old, well, 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 what do you know?
So are we, I'm assuming we are, everything's planted. Does that account everything that's planted?
Should.
It should.
Yeah. Is this a June report?
Yes, this is a June 30th, 2026 report.
But June 30th was like 3 days ago.
I don't know how much cotton's still being planted for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, so. There might be some out there, but.
Okay. But if we see a swing in it, it might be just another 10, 20,000, if at all.
If that, I know there was a good bit of late planted cotton, especially in the central and the south part of the state, but you're gambling a lot planting this, you know, even replanting this kind of this late, putting in cotton. But overall, it's got the reported at 53% square, and I think that's a little bit high. I think we're a little bit behind in some of these areas, especially in the south part of Alabama. In the north part, I agree with that. I think we're going into square, and it all depended on that weather. When you planted in that May period was really kind of, I quote, wonky. We had some time periods of where if you planted within 1 week span, you got two different kind of environments for planting, right? So you had either adequate moisture and some temperatures, or it turned cool and it was really wet when you planted. Those seeds got waterlogged. So that's kind of where we were.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the cotton I just looked at over the last 2 weeks, or even this week, anywhere from 6 or 7 leaf stage to yesterday I was in a field where they were pixing and it was like,
yeah, were you out at
my waist high?
Yeah, oh yeah, I walked that earlier this week out in Tallahassee in that area. There was a crop, it was planted in May, and there was some stuff that was planted real early May, and it was already going into bloom, about a week or so into bloom, and goodness gracious, it had some growth potential behind it. Mm-hmm. It was a really thick stalk, really good internode length, so it was getting after it. So if it catches another one of those rains, they just side dress nitrogen, so they better get on it with PGRs and make sure they keep a watch on it.
Yeah, the grower I was with, one of the growers I was with yesterday, they were pixing already, and their cotton was growing pretty fast.
Yeah.
So
getting side dress out and all that kind of stuff, yeah, that's going to make it jump up too.
Yeah. You know, it kind of makes me think, we were talking about side dress and pixing at the same time, and I heard this when I was in Georgia, because we were doing a good bit of work on some PGR application and stuff. And I don't know if the growers are kind of, or our recommendations need to be a little bit more, but it's like, we talk about nitrogen application in cotton, where our rates are usually a little bit higher on where it need to be. And we see that, hey, anytime you're over 90 or 100, there's no point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of makes me think, which is maybe a valid point in a way, that we get a little more aggressive with nitrogen first, right? And then we got to come back and be aggressive in PGR, because now you're trying to manage what you actually. So it's like just working against yourself. Like early on, you're trying to be aggressive with putting more nitrogen, and the plant's going to shoot up.
Well,
and now you're trying to manage that plant, be more, a little bit more aggressive with your PGR.
Unless you get 42 inches of rain in 2 weeks, like they did in Southwest Alabama, and then all your
nitrogen's gone. So
yeah. Yeah, so that was definitely one of the conversations, you know, I talked with Chandler about, is like, how much do we have? What about side dress nitrogen recommendations, that kind of stuff? Definitely, especially in South Alabama, you know, we had a good bit of, you know, Scott, we rode down there, we saw a good bit of flooded fields, that kind of stuff, and that sandier ground. We may want to up those side dress nitrogen rates just a little bit, just to see what we've got. Again, we kind of want to monitor that. And, you know, similar to your point, we were talking about putting PGRs out with our side dress nitrogen. It's almost like you're putting gas to the crop, putting that nitrogen out, right? And then you're kind of pumping the brakes, putting it on with the PGR. And so one of the things you got to keep in mind, if you're side dressing with a good bit of nitrogen, if you're going 60 to 80 pounds side dress, you got to make sure that you're going to have water there. It's going to take off. I promise you it will. And I think what happens is a lot of folks are reactive instead of proactive on this PGR, right? They already watched that crop take off. And sometimes it can be too far gone. Most of the time you can catch it, keyword most. Sometimes you kind of like, well, it's kind of gotten ahead of me now. And then we're playing, quote, the game of catch up. The game of catch up is a hard one to win in a lot of cases. So one of the things I'd like to talk about a little bit is some of that PGR management that we've got in this season as we go on. One of the biggest things that we've got, or we do have, you know, Extension loves to talk about tools in the toolbox. All right, so what do we have now available? So one of those things is definitely some guides for your PGR management strategy. So how do you select it? What kind of rates? What kind of products? Those kind of things. So the Mid-South Extension Cotton Specialist Working Group I'm in, we just put out a PGR management guide for Mid-South cotton. It's got, you know, a good bit, it's got actually a table in the back that kind of gives a use recommendation and rate, you know, suggestion based on, you know, your crop variety, your cotton variety, your nodes, your plant height, and overall conditions in that plant, you know, to kind of estimate, you know, how much PGR should you put out, you know, when should you be more or less aggressive in those environments. Also included in that guide is a cotton variety guide to PGR responsiveness. And I think that's one of the key things. You know, we've got a lot of varieties to choose from as a cotton grower. There's a bunch of different ones. They've got different traits. Some have different packages, you know, whatever. Each grower has their own thing that they're kind of wanting for. Well, what we've done is we've put together a pretty comprehensive list of varieties that we know that are going to be you know, not as responsive or really responsive to plant growth regulator. So that's something to keep in mind, you know, when we're looking at a PGR strategy and what we're trying to go for, we're wanting to look at it as a whole systematic approach, right? Of course, your nitrogen plays into mm-hmm. role, but if you've got a really aggressive growing variety, you know, you want to probably monitor that one more and maybe apply a little bit more PGR than something that's not as responsive, right? A lot of times we get into a situation where we don't want to, quote, you know, cut the crop out. We don't want to halt the crop. We don't want to halt the growth. But make sure that we're making wise decisions in the field before we just go say, all right, well, I'm going already out there with an insecticide mix or a herbicide mix or whatever. I'm just going to put some you know, methacrylate chloride in the tank. How much? That's going to be pretty key.
So help me explain this. I know you usually talk about in your talks, internode length and all that. Like, what are we trying to manage with that picks? And like, if a grower's looking at, okay, do I need to be aggressive? Do I need to be moderate? Or do I not need to put anything?
Sure.
What are some of the things they are looking at as they're looking at a crop?
Sure. So when one of the main things we're looking at with PGR management is correct, the fourth internode length. All right, so what is that? The fourth internode length is the most recently matured internode on a cotton plant. And that's going to tell me the responsiveness of that crop to its environment, right? So it's going to kind of tell me where it's at, how much growth potential it's got, and how responsive it is to a PGR application. We can come back and measure that fourth internode length to see if we actually put out our PGR and if it's actually working effectively. So what does that mean in terms of what lengths we're looking at? Well, what we're really doing is we're looking between a length of about 2.5 inches to 3 inches, okay? That's going to be really conducive to high vegetative growth. We're probably going to want to pull that trigger on applying a PGR application. In that Mid-South guide, there is a little piece where it says, like, I think it says fair, good, or great plant growth right there, and it kind of gives a range of, I think, 2.25, 2.5, and up to 3 inches, you know, how, and that kind of determines how aggressive you need to be with your plant growth regulator. So for example, let's say that I'm in an environment where I'm going into bloom. Let's say we're at first flower. All right, so we're at first flower. I've got a more aggressive style growing variety. There's a bunch of different ones. Let's say I got an aggressive variety. I've got the nitrogen side dressed to it. I got at least 60 units of nitrogen and I'm catching decent rainfall. That crop right there is more than likely going to take off on me. So I'm going to have to definitely kind of monitor that crop and make sure I'm being timely with my PGR strategy. So on that kind of crop, I may at least want to hit it at least by first flower, maybe hit it at match head, go into match head, then go into first flower, and then probably do a follow-up consideration around peak blooms. So around that third week of bloom, we'll hit it again with a little bit higher rate. Again, one of the biggest things with our PGRs when we're thinking about selecting it and when to apply is that PGRs work really well when the crop is actively growing. Mm-hmm. Do not apply on a drought stress crop. When you think about it, when you're using PGRs, herbicides, or other products like that, in order for that product to be completely uptaken by the crop, it has to be actively growing so it can actually absorb and move around in that plant. If you apply PGR to something that a crop that's already drought stressed, that crop's already in like a kind of defense mm-hmm. mode, right? It's saying, I can't take any more up. I don't want to take this. I'm not going to respond to it. So definitely something to keep in mind. Keep in mind right there.
Okay. Scott, how do you think, I know Josh put a lot of internode and other stuff. Always, like, we all do research stuff and we got to do all that. How much you think growers are actually doing all that, or they're just kind of visualizing, you know, like, and deciding their rate? What do you think?
That's a good question. My experience talking with people, it feels like they kind of do both and.
Okay.
You know, there are some folks that go out and look. There are some that, I mean, they've been growing cotton crops, just, you know, longer than Josh and I have been alive, and they just kind of know what they're doing, right? But certainly I feel like a lot of your consultants and scouts and those guys, that's their job is to spend time in the cotton field. You know, the grower's job is really to spend time on the sprayer or the planter or whatever, right? I think those guys in particular are doing a pretty good job with this. And I mean, it's simple. It sounds complicated. It's simple.
Yeah.
You go out there, that fourth, if you bend the plant, right, that's the node it bends at, and you just stick three fingers there, and it's either bigger or smaller.
Yeah.
That's it, Scott.
I was thinking about it when you're describing the process. I kind of wish I would have been there when they figured out how to do this. You know what I mean? Like because it is so simple. Yeah. But I'm sure it was not to figure out, okay, this node shows us what's currently growing. This is how tall, you know, like, it sounds complicated, but it doesn't take very much time. We now, you know, when we're out looking in fields, since the kids have been to all, my student workers have all been to scout schools, I'm like, all right, y'all tell me we need to pick this field or not. And so they're all out there doing their fingers and arguing over this, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
And,
you know, that's just a good point that I need to have my students go to a scout school next year.
Yeah. Yeah. You do.
No. So they don't not just know about the sprayer and nozzles, but they also know about the other stuff.
That's right. They need to know everything about the crop you work with, the crops you work with.
So what's going on the bug world?
Well, it's pretty quiet overall. Plant bugs are starting
to
pick up.
That's good news.
That's good news. Very good news. Plant bugs are finally starting to pick up. A lot of the daisy fleabane and other weedy hosts are starting to play out, and so they're moving. Talked to some guys in North Alabama that are putting on second applications. A lot of guys in Central and South Alabama, a little bit of multiple, but a lot are just, they're starting to go out with picks, like Josh is saying, and, you know, they're finding some plant bugs, not a ton, and so we've kind of walked through, you know, what you might consider doing there. It's been kind of field to field on those things. Weird amount of stink bugs in pre-bloom cotton. So you're talking to somebody the other day, was Blake. Blake was saying he was seeing a fair amount of immature stink bugs.
What's causing that?
I don't know. They should be in all the corn. I don't know what they're doing. There's really nothing for them to feed on in cotton right now, and they're not doing damage. And so the point there being, if you see stink bugs in squaring cotton, don't worry about it. They're not going to hurt a squirrel.
You know, my students got so excited the other day that I showed you a picture of what were the slugs or?
The snails, yeah.
Snails.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They just won't quit talking about it.
Snails.
Like they found a new insect or something. I'm like, no. I'm like, Scott said, don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, not dialing cotton that big, we're not worried about it. But, yeah, overall, things have been pretty quiet. The Jacid deal is, it's out there. You know, that I think they're up to 4 counties in Georgia that they found them on cotton.
Are they at a point where in those counties where they are starting to affect cotton, or
no,
is it just a, they're like just, detected?
They're just detected. Okay. Yeah, yeah. In Quincy, Florida, on the experiment station there, they're seeing reproduction. We've been really fortunate, I think, that we've had this cool weather, cloudy weather, and excess rain, because those are things that negatively impact cotton jacid growth and development. But, and I made this point in the newsletter, I think, and in my last blog, the cotton needs that to stop, right? We gotta kick this thing into gear. And so my guess is over the next couple of weeks, we're probably going to start adding counties in Alabama that have jacids in them. Zeke found some spray paint in a boat Sunday, right?
Spray paint in a boat. Did it catch
it? It was coming to the shop lot.
Oh.
So for sure, too. I might have counted the same one twice when it was flying around, but I thought I saw 3, for sure 2.
You got to name them, then you know them different.
I could do that.
Or like the deer lab, tag them, GPS tag.
That's right, yeah. Can you imagine how tedious that would be?
They make small GPS devices.
I'm sure they do.
If you can come up with some tags, I'll try to do it.
Yeah, all right.
Keep track of them.
But anyway, so as of right now in Alabama, we still have that one that we found in cotton in Shorter at EV.
So Zeke was back in, man, home?
No, Zeke was here, but it wasn't found in cotton. It was found in a
shop,
spray painting a boat.
Okay. Different environment.
Different environment.
Hey, didn't you say this all come from the ocean and everything, and maybe they're so used to seeing the boats and everything there. Like
maybe so, yeah, yeah.
He thought that, hey, this is kind of our environment, right?
Maybe so. I have heard some rumblings, not in Alabama, but of a lot of jacid showing up in hibiscus and some big box stores from South Florida. And so what's going on there, they think, is they're spraying, killing the adults, and then the eggs are hatching in transit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they show up, they've got a pretty heavy infestation. So if anybody's in Lowe's or Home Depot or somewhere like that in the next week or so, just kind of look. Stop by every time I go to anywhere. Kroger had sunflowers. They were the sorriest looking sunflowers I've ever seen in front of the store in Auburn for a couple of weeks. And every day when I went, every time I went, I would stop and spend 5 minutes and just look.
Looking through. They must think you're like crazy or something. Like, he's so picky about his flowers.
Well, I think the reason they finally got rid of them was they thought I couldn't find one worth buying.
Oh.
I'm telling you, they were
Did
sorry.
You tell them where you were looking for
No, no. They were sorry. Look, if I was a Jacet, I wouldn't want to be on those sunflowers.
Yeah. So.
But anyway, that's somewhere to be looking. I've said this before, I think, on here, but I'm not as concerned about finding Jacets on hibiscus in a big box store in wherever, and then the whole county getting Jacets. That might help spread them. But what I'm more concerned about is those resistance genes possibly getting in the landscape there and spreading resistance that way.
Yeah, so I know you got a really good timeline off last year. So how do we fare compared to last year, this year?
We think we're probably pretty close.
Okay.
So last year we found the first one in cotton at the same E.V. Smith station on June, was it like the 15th, 13th, somewhere in there? And we found one this year a week earlier.
Okay.
So we're pretty close timeline.
But like, Georgia, this week,
this week last year was when they really started being noticed in Florida. And in
like a high activity.
And in Georgia, that's right. It's okay. When they really started kind of seeing them.
Okay.
And so we don't know how early we could have detected them last year, because we quite honestly weren't looking hard as we are now,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
But my gut kind of tells me right now we're probably looking at something similar to last year, which, knowing everything that we know now, we can manage it, right? We had a record crop last year.
Yeah.
We can manage it.
Okay.
Now we got 70,000 more acres.
That's true. Yeah. We got more acres, more cotton.
That's right. So maybe we can dilute that population out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. But next couple weeks is where we'll even know.
So we, in Alabama, we didn't start having. We didn't find one in a commercial field last year until August the 12th.
I was going to say it was probably August.
It was in August.
Okay.
Yeah, it started in East Georgia and slowly moved west.
Let me ask you something. It just occurred while we were talking. People going to the beach this weekend from a lot of these states, is there any potential of them bringing them back or nothing? Because, I mean, you think about, like, 4th of July weekend, everybody's going to, you know, a lot of people going there.
Yeah.
And if I hear you saying correctly that it all starts like kind of from the ocean side and then slowly moves up, there's a potential of people bringing them.
It's certainly possible.
Okay.
It's certainly
just
possible.
Just don't stop by, tell you them not to stop by any cotton fields on the
way. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I have gotten on an airplane in Atlanta, Georgia, and seen a kudzu bug. And then when I got wherever I was going, you know, other side of the country, that kudzu bug was still there.
On the plane.
And so insects absolutely can hitchhike on people to get around places. But I wouldn't worry about that too much right now.
Okay. Josh, what else you got on your list, man?
I think we're pretty much good. I mean, we've covered it pretty good. I want to talk about the insect front.
Let me ask you this, because I was solving a nozzle puzzle yesterday with the grower in a way. What's our recommendations on putting picks, and what type of water volumes do we have?
I don't think we have one that's clear.
Okay.
That's a question for Simmer.
That's a Simmer question, yeah.
I haven't done much work with picks at different nozzle. I thought it was more like you just put enough to make it work, you know, but real quickly, I think given that we are where people are going out and pixing and all that, I think we want to make sure that, I think Camp had some data back in Georgia where he did found that, you know, if you're spraying like minimum, whatever's minimum on the label, 10 gallons, all that, you better make sure that you have a good nozzle that gives you good coverage, stuff like that. And we found similar results, not, we didn't do this work in cotton, but even like peanut fungicides and stuff like that. the biggest tool, and I tell people, and they don't realize this, because even the girl we were talking to was like, oh, we want to run lower volume so we can cover more acres. And I'm like, well, you don't understand, if you miss parts of the field and it didn't work, then you got to come back. Then there's twice the amount of time and effort plus money involved in it. Anything above 10 is better. I'm not saying, my recommendation always, like 15 gallons of water is a pretty good amount, right? But we even done some work at 12 and a half. 12 and a half is a lot better than 10. The more higher we are on volume, it just increases the potential of like more efficacy and everything, because it kind of makes the nozzle and other, I don't want to say not important, but less important.
Sure.
Like the droplet size and everything, if you're not really dialed in, you should still be able to get by. So I think there's some considerations like that, for sure, that, you know, we need to consider. I think the situation, and I'll share, and maybe whoever's listening may want to go check their nozzles, because I had a grower call me, and he sprayed some herbicides in cotton, and he said the stuff didn't work, you know, and we kind of started troubleshooting some things. So I went out, looked at the sprayer. They had bought a sprayer from somewhere, and the sprayer actually had dicamba tips on it, ultra coarse droplet nozzles and all that, and they were trying to spray like Liberty or something, which really needed good coverage to work at all. They're like, oh, we didn't know what that meant on the nozzle, you know. And the nozzle actually said ULD, ultra low drift, you know. When you're using an ultra low drift nozzle, very high droplet, very large droplet, and you're spraying minimum 10 gallon volume, you better be spraying something systemic and all that, because if it needs coverage, there's going to be not a lot of coverage there. So I think that was kind of number one issue there, along with some other things going on.
I say it every time I introduce you at the scout school, but it is so complicated to get your sprayer
right. I know.
I don't see how we can kill into
that. Well, that's why I said you don't want to be on the minimum side of the things, because that's where a lot of sprayer issues are starting to show up.
Yep.
If you just have a little bit of, you know, like insurance, and then what I call, you know, don't spray 10, spray 12 and a half or 15. If your droplet sizes say, hey, you want to be medium, yes, you can be a little bit coarser, but don't go ultra coarse, you know. And the other tool that we have, every grower has, and I know it, you know, it don't make sense to them anyway, slow down. You know, the stuff will work, you know. So when you're running 14, 15 miles per hour spray with some of these high, big sprayers, man, we're like pushing them to their capacity. And then if you don't have the right nozzle or some of the stuff, you're not putting out what the sprayer is actually supposed to put out. So that's why, like, some of those things, just don't push everything to the limit and do that. I think we want to be like, if 100% is the limit where we be, I think if we can just back off at 80%, you know, if you know your max speed the sprayer can run and do this effectively is 16 miles per hour, I'd just take 80% of that. And usually I say 12 to 14 miles per hour, go do it. You know? So
Zeke, what do they say in the military? Slow is steady and steady is fast.
Steady is smooth.
Or smooth, what, slow is smooth and smooth is fast?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
But yeah, all right, we are pretty close to our time, so any last minute thoughts or anything?
Be timely.
Yeah.
Go get them.
With everything.
With everything, yep.
So, but we do have some field days coming up, right? Do you have that handy or no? Okay, well, we'll put them in maybe in the
I got them. If you give me a second,
fine.
I've got them. There are in the Alabama cotton shorts. I did put them in there. There's a section right below.
Why don't you brief it really
quickly? Yeah, we'll put a plug in real quick.
I'm pretty sure I know the dates, but I don't want to say them wrong. So,
all right.
July 30th is TV Rec. I know that.
Yeah, July 30th is TV Rec. So the first one we got is the Gulf Coast Field Tour. That's going to be July 9th at 9 a.m. Next one's going to be the East Alabama Crops Tour. That's going to be July 29th, 9 a.m. And similar, like you said, Tennessee Valley Field Day, it's going to be July 30th at 9 a.m. And you've also got the Optima Field Days. There are going to be two of those, Optima Field Day in Geneva County. That's going to be August the 10th at 9:30. And then you've got Optima Field Day in Cherokee County. That's going to be August 26th at 10 a.m.
Okay.
All right. Well, guys, enjoyed it today. Zeke, your first appearance on the podcast. Good job. So with that, we'll sign off. As always, if any of us in Alabama with Alabama Extension can do anything to help, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.